we have this stakeholder map, so you understand for each person their power and their attitude. Let's call it like this, and it's basically four quadrants, and we use color coding for all the quadrants. And the worst thing that can happen to you is if a person is negative towards experimentation and has a high power.
Yeah,
we mark these people blue. Right, these are the people that usually create pain in the ass in your day-to-day job because they don't want you to change certain things, or they don't like it at all, or they try to prove you wrong with your data, whatever.
Hi, everyone. My name is Romeo Santiago, and I will be your host today for today's episode of Experiment Nation, the podcast. On today's episode, we're going to talk about getting experimentation buy-in. And our guest for today is Andre Morris. He's from Germany. He's the CEO of a Convergenzkraft. That's my best shot at pronouncing that.
Brilliant.
Please, Andre, introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Andre. I started my company already 25 years ago and quickly moved into data-driven optimization. I think that was before it was called conversion optimization. Let's not talk about this. This name, if it's the right
name. Yeah, a lot of people argue about that sort of thing.
Yeah, me too. But now we have the name. We have to stick with it. So yeah, we are a consultancy with around 80 people. We work for mostly companies in Germany. So maybe outside of Germany, people don't know Convergenzkraft or the company. And that's okay.
Before we dive in here, in terms of the topic of getting experimentation buy-in, I'd love to hear your thoughts about why you think it's an important skill for CROs mm-hmm. or experimenters to have. I know it's something that we all run into all the time, so I'd love to hear your perspective.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, because I'm doing this thing since a couple of years, I think I've run into every trap you can possibly run into. So basically, we are hired by mid-level executives. So when they call for help, it's usually that a redesign ran wrong or somebody experienced that A/B tests don't get the uplift or whatever. So the typical situation is that experimentation is stuck somewhere in the middle with people that aim to do the right things, and they do what they do right. But they use it as a tactical method. So whenever there's some, like a sandbox, you can play around a little bit. When there's something that you could do with A/B test, then quickly somebody pulls out the idea to do an A/B test. But quickly, these people realize that it's not implemented inside the company, that the company does not have a culture of experimentation. So, of course, they will get some or will experience some tension between stakeholders, what they should do, what they shouldn't do, people that don't want to be proven wrong or whatever it is, all that traps you can run into. So I think I've experienced them all. And this is why since a long time, I tried to find ways to facilitate this buy-in to actually change companies. I think it's a question of change, not a question of tools or skills or whatever. It's a cultural change. And I think it became one of the topics I really like talking about most, because I think all the success that is behind A/B testing and experimentation basically is blocked from this constraint, solving this riddle. If you solve it, go further. If you don't solve it, you will be stuck in the middle forever.
So to reflect what I understand, are you saying that unless you can tackle this challenge, your life will be very hard as an
optimist
or what have you.
Exactly.
I think many... Yeah. Go on, sorry.
I think many optimizers feel that way, that their work is not appreciated, that they are stuck with testing small things and iterations while they could do much more, could create a much bigger contribution to the overall value creation of a company. But they're not asked to do so, and that is possibly really frustrating. It's like many forces, and many times people who do optimization A/B testing have the feeling that they're fighting against everyone else, or at least a couple of different forces.
It sounds to me, and I've experienced it myself, but I'd love to hear your perspective. It sounds to me that as you do CRO or experimentation, that someone who does this and works with other teams has to be ready for a certain level of conflict. and
Yes.
has to be able to be strong enough to get through that. If you're not, if
Yes.
you're conflict averse, if you're someone who doesn't like that sort of thing, is CRO the career for you, or is it something you can learn, or are we can hold this off till later? I just wanted to hear your perspective.
I think there's a way to move things forward without conflict, but of course you will meet opponents and you have to argue with them and you have to find your way through the stakeholder map. And I think that's why I say many optimizers are obsessed with statistics and goals and tools and performance and whatever data, but that's not the critical skill. The critical skills are inside change management, stakeholder management, cultural change. That's what, as a conversion manager or whatever your job is called, product manager, experimentation, no matter. Then your real challenge is to get buy-in. Yeah, for sure.
So, it's an important skill to have, but an experimenter or a CRO will have multiple tests to run. Especially for agencies, you always want to have your billable rate and you want to retainer, what have you. Should a CRO trying to get things done expect to have to get buy-in for every single experiment, or th do things change with time?
No, I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. You need to create a system where you don't need to struggle for buy-in for each test. You need to get buy-in for experimentation itself, for a culture of experimentation. And this per se is a conflict with many attitudes, especially from managers and top managers. And I think that brought us to a situation where we call them hippos, which does not help for sure. Having these people with more power as an enemy does not move things forward. So that is my first rule of thumb. The first heuristic is convince these people, don't fight them. This is why I think you don't, actually, I think you don't need to run into real conflicts. It's about persuasion and about change. But of course, you have to identify the people that we call hippos, where we think they're in our way and we just have to ignore them or remove them. That does not work. And yeah, usually these people don't care about A/B tests and statistics and their reality. It just makes things more complex. It proves them wrong, and so on. So it's nothing they want to follow with. It's something that is maybe even a constraint to them and to their work and to achieve their goals. And this is important to understand. So this is why I think things like stakeholder management are one crucial thing of every person that is responsible for moving experimentation programs forward.
So we've danced around the topic a lot here in the introduction. Let's dive into this system. I'm
Yeah.
very curious to hear about it myself because I've definitely run into these challenges. I've sometimes stumbled my way through, and sometimes it worked brilliantly. But I'd love to hear about this system that you have.
So basically, I mean, I was calling it stakeholder management. I think the first thing that everybody who's responsible for experimentation should do is create a stakeholder map. So when you look at your company, you are somewhere inside an organization and you have other teams and they have goals and they have managers. So without knowing what, of course, the explicit goals of these people and these teams are, that's the easy part, you know, understanding what their goals are. Maybe it is even documented somewhere for the company. But these
You'd
people
hope.
also, hopefully, yeah. But I mean, it's easy to talk about this with people, understand their goals, understand what's important to them, what are their challenges. And I would say that's the first task. Talk to people, understand their reality. This is how we create stakeholder maps. Actually, we draw the lines of an organization, all the hierarchy, all the people, and we try to understand what's their power, especially in the context of our topic. So when we're talking about experimentation, maybe the legal team has a certain power about this, maybe privacy things or whatever, but it's not a big power. While the brand team or marketing team, whatever, has much higher power because they want to influence things. And they have a hidden agenda telling us everything needs to be aesthetical and beautiful, and A-B testing is a pain in the ass because it does not make things beautiful, so they don't like us, for example. But you only find out if you talk to people and create this map. So first job, create a map, understand what is the power of each person in this map. And the second question is, are these people positive or negative towards our topic? So what are their objections about experimentation and A-B testing? Understand it, ask it, open. And if they say, no, I don't have any objections, I just don't understand it, it's fine for me to do whatever you want, then maybe this person is neutral. If this person tells you, well, it's brilliant, I love it, I would do, actually, I would love to do experiments in my team as well, but we just can't do it. So you see, people are positive.
This is Romo Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
We have this stakeholder map, so you understand for each person their power and their attitude. Let's call it like this. And it's basically four quadrants, and we use color coding for all the quadrants. And the worst thing that can happen to you is if a person is negative towards experimentation and has a high power, we mark these people blue, right? These are the people that usually create pain in the ass in your day-to-day job because they don't want you to change certain things, or they don't like it at all, or they try to prove you wrong with your data, whatever. While the ones that are positive with a high power, we mark them orange, right? So, and now you have a plan where you basically are able to find your way through the stakeholders. And it's a very easy rule. Don't approach people with more power than you have bottom up. It won't work. These people always will have more power than you have, and they will overrule you. It's like a board game, right? So find your way through the stakeholders. So you can influence stakeholders either lateral from the side or top down. So in German, there's a saying that means the staircase is always brushed from top to bottom.
Never. I love that. I've never heard that one. That's great.
So and this is where I think, of course, you can already craft your letter of resignation because you struggle with all these blue stakeholders, or you can see it more strategically. See the map, see the possibilities, and sometimes it's very exotic, but maybe the CFO is your biggest friend and the CMO is your biggest enemy. So what should you do? Use the CFO, go to the CEO, overrule these guys or talk to them and try to change things. But never, as I said, never from bottom to the top. Always approach these people the other way around. I think this is the most critical success factor.
I'm going to throw a little by hypothetical situation where, let's say, a blue square is occupied by head of engineering, just randomly, and nothing gets built without them. Mm-hmm. Is it Mission Impossible, or is there a way... No. So your framework, you'd go to their peer, one of their peers that is orange or a color that we like, and then go again towards
or you're approaching the superior boss, you know, the head of engineering.
That's
maybe
true.
Reports to the CTO or whatever.
You skip a step.
Yes, skip a step. If helpful, maybe it's risky, but of course you could also write your letter of resignation, but you already lost. So I think, yeah, take risks, skip levels and talk to people. But I think most important is be curious and open-minded and understand the objections of the blue person, because maybe this person did not understand experimentation right or has some trouble. And, you know, that's a problem. It's rarely the case that someone really on the top completely understands it, right? Like the Netflix stories where the founder explains A-B testing to everybody on the team. That usually does not happen. So the maturity regarding experimentation usually gets lower and lower the more you get to the top. So this is why I think it's our job to explain it to people. And For sure. If you don't understand the objections of the head of engineering or whatever, and you don't talk to him because you're afraid of him, that it won't move things forward. So, yeah, I would agree to you. Finally, if it's a conflict, then people have started to talk about it. It's not the best option, but at least maybe things are starting to move. So, yeah.
I want to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned that kind of piqued my curiosity. You mentioned to be curious, and I think that I think folks in consulting will understand what that is. But I'd love to hear your perspective on what does that mean for the tactical level for someone who's new to this. What does it mean to go in curious?
I mean, be like empathetic and try to put yourself into the shoes of the person. I was just talking actually to a chief digital officer, and I thought, well, experimentation has a really low priority for this organization, and this guy should be responsible for it. So I talked to him. He said, you know what, Andre, I'm so worried. I have 21 direct reports. I have to take care about the fiber internet thing between all the buildings and the server structure and the text. And he just went on and on telling me about all the challenges he has, and basically understood that, well, I understand. I hear you, man. I feel it. A/B testing is not your priority, right? So you have so many issues on lower levels. And I think while we went forward and he talked about these things, it was clear how we kind of mingled around the topic, and he understood it, and he and everything kind of cleared up afterwards. But be curious, understand the people, and you will learn a lot, and you will find ways to solve it. Otherwise, nothing changes.
That's great. I think that's a great definition. Often you hear that online, just be curious and go in. But that's not like coming in and just like asking questions and challenging. It's more about being human and listening and being open to their perspectives that you don't necessarily agree. You want to understand how they're seeing things.
Exactly. You don't want to persuade something. Go into the meeting and talk to the people, and it's 100% focus about them, their challenges, their objections, their reality, their fears, their goals. You will learn so much. So this is what makes your stakeholder map a gold treasure. Yeah.
You touched on the word objections, and I'd love to get your perspective on, so you understand their objection. How do you craft your strategy based on that objection? Let's say they don't like XYZ. What do you do?
I would say 90% of the cases, objections were a result from a lack of knowledge and experience. So mostly people project experiences from the past to the current situation, and they think, well, A/B testing, that will create a big performance issue with our website, whatever. And these people don't know that it would be solvable if you talk about it. You will find ways. You can suggest things. They did not maybe know about how to implement server-side testing tool to their SPA, whatever. They just don't know it because they did not have to do it before. So this is why I use the term objection, which is usually used in sales techniques, which means understand the perspective of somebody that is hesitating to do something because they have something in their mind. That's why we call it an objection. But it's basically, together with your reality, you might find a solution. But first, you have to understand the objection.
So let's go back to your approach of the stairs and finding the allies and going towards the blue squares. When you work with smaller to larger to international to larger companies, does your approach change at all, or does it stay the same across?
It starts the same. But I would say, of course, the bigger the company, the bigger are the forces that I call implicit. You know, we talked about explicit goals. So everybody has explicit goals, sales goals, revenue goals, whatever goals. Implicit goals is all about power and influence in an organization. So, for example, we worked for a big German fashion brand. And these guys are a traditional company, and they became successful because of their iconic brand. So, of course, everything that has to do with brand is a huge force in this company. So you can't touch the brand. You're not allowed to do that. Similar when you're talking to automobile makers, it's maybe engineering. So there are these hidden forces, and these people have the power. They get the big budgets. They have they will tell you what's going on. So when we talk about stakeholder mapping, it's not just only about explicit goals that people have in their job description. It's also about implicit forces inside a company. So if you're working for a company where brand is a big force, you might have a bad time with experimentation, for example, because these guys might be mighty and the CMO loves them. And yeah, everything will be done by a brand agency, whatever. That might be a pain in the ass. But again, talk to people, understand that there are data-driven approaches to do brand management as well, and they will understand.
Are there other factors that influence your approach? You mentioned there's implicit factors. Is there anything else?
No.
Okay.
I think what's important is things can change quickly. The bigger the organization, the more it is about politics. Yeah. And bigger companies often do reorganization projects. So quickly, the people you have talked to change their position, everything changed, and you have the feeling, damn it, I have to start again from scratch. But no, if you know the people, you just relocate them on the map, still the same people. And you know, if you talk to everyone and everybody had the feeling that you understand them, it's a foundation for building trust and relationships. And so basically, that's like the secret weapon to move forward, because finally, you want to convince the top management to do more experiments and to be more data-driven or customer-centric or both. And that's your way to do it.
And how long does something like this take? Like, if we were to work with you, you know, whatever company works with you folks, how long should they factor in this whole engagement?
I mean, it depends on how many people it is and how many people you have to talk to. But you know, usually if it's like a mid-sized organization with a couple of hundred people, you usually have, let's say, 5 to 10 really important stakeholders you have to talk to. So maybe 2 weeks. That's maybe like the first step to understand each other. But I would say it goes on forever because, yeah, of course,
it's always changing.
Yes, it's changing, and you want to keep relationships or even strengthen them or go deeper or learn more. So yeah.
Let's touch on that just real quick. As you have these conversations with these stakeholders, how often do you come back to them to talk about progress or news about their objection? Do you do anything? Do you schedule anything, or what's your approach?
So first of all, I think pre-COVID things have been easier because you met people at the coffee machine, yeah, or whatever in the lobby or during lunch. It was so much easier to get in touch with people. So now that you have to schedule a meeting and everybody thinks, well, we have to find a topic to schedule a meeting, some people are hesitant to do this kind of talks. But you know, my trick is people like to help each other. So every time I ask somebody, say, well, I need your help. Do you have time to talk with me about XYZ during a coffee, whatever? You get people to talk. But usually depending on how close they are, how important they are, it's sufficient to talk to them maybe once or twice a year, while with others, you talk every week. There's no formula. Maybe I have to develop one, but so far...
No, it sounds good. How do you know if it's working? If you're getting that buy-in, what are the signs that folks can look towards to know that all their hard work is paying off?
I would say basically you will feel that things are moving forward and you have much less barriers to overcome and convince people, because people will trust you. So these daily hassles that can really ruin your job, that they should be lower. It's maybe your personal energy, but finally, if you're running an experimentation program, you will see the amount of experiments and how long they take, like velocity and results. And I claim you will see that these numbers will improve quickly.
Awesome. We're almost at time, and I wanted to, give you a chance to share anything that you'd like to share with our audience, any
Yeah.
projects upcoming, anything that we should know to look out for.
Oh, everybody that is in Europe, come to Growth Marketing Summit. That's my conference I organize each year. You're invited. Please come, Rommel. I send you a ticket. And everybody
Awesome.
else, it's growthmarketingsummit.com. It's I would say with 700 to 800 people, one of the
Wow.
biggest or maybe the biggest event about experimentation and customer experience in Europe. It's in Frankfurt in June. Come
Oh,
on. We're
awesome.
talking about many of these topics because I think this is like most important, most crucial for the success. Yeah.
And for those who are interested in going, what languages are spoken at the conference?
English. It's completely English. We
Okay.
have like 40% of our attendees are outside of Germany. Yeah, it's completely English. We have I usually my pitch is it's a handpicked lineup because I'm speaking at many conferences. Each time I see somebody that's giving a great talk, I think, well, you should come. You should speak at my conference. Because maybe you know that feeling. You go to a conference and one talk is good or two out of 10, it's a
Yeah.
bad ratio. So this is all about networking. So it's a real life conference and yeah.
Very cool.
And the second thing is
Oh, sorry.
yeah, we just talked about stakeholder management. I think the second model that's really important, but I don't have to explain it here, is change management. So look into Kotter's 8-step model of change, because basically that's a mighty tool to change the
Awesome.
culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah,
How can folks reach out to you if they want to learn more about your conference or your company or yourself?
LinkedIn. Search me on LinkedIn, maybe add a note that you heard from me at this podcast, so I know you're not pitching a tool or whatever and you just want to
What, that
be connected.
happens? Surprised. I'm very surprised people do that.
Yeah.
Great. Andre, I want to thank you for your time. It was great meeting you. It was a pleasure hearing about your framework. I love the staircase analogy. That's something I'm going to take away and incorporate into my practice. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being on the show. All
Thanks for having me.
right. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
This is Roma Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch.